Present.
Commissioner Harriman.
Present.
Commissioner Gusakuma.
Here.
Commissioner Ward.
Here.
We always begin our meetings with public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda. I'd like to mention before we begin that it is our inclination in order to accommodate the largest number of members of the public who are here to do item 3 and then move item 4 to later in the agenda because we think item 5 is interest to many of you and that it would be more convenient to accelerate that on our agenda. It might also incline some of you to speak directly to the issue under number 5 rather than here in the general section, which is open and available for comment of any kind, but it's helpful for us to hear comment on a particular issue clustered together. So if that is satisfactory to the other commissioners, we'll do it in that order. 2, 3, 5, and then we will pick up item 4 after that. Any concern? Okay. In that case, is there any public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda that are within the jurisdiction of the Ethics Commission that you'd like to make at this time? Okay. We're going to do item number 3, consideration of a request for waiver for compensated advocate from the ban on compensated advocacy by Mr. Buskovich, a member of the Board of Examiners.
I think Mr. Buskovich has a very brief.
Good evening, Commissioners. I'll be brief. I've been asked by the Building Department to serve on the Board of Examiners. We meet once a year approximately. It's at the request of the Building Department on cases where they need our assistance. They require a licensed structural engineer. There's only about 30 licensed structural engineers that are residents of San Francisco. I'm being one of them, 3,000 in the entire state. Being a licensed structural engineer means you are practicing. So for me to practice, and I only practice in San Francisco, I need a waiver. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer. Thank you.
Do any of the commissioners have questions for Mr. Buskovich? I'll also ask you if you have any questions for the staff in a moment, but any questions for him? Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Are there any questions for the staff on this item? I was wondering if we've ever had comment from either the Board of Examiners or the BIC as to whether they feel that it would be, this is not a question for you, I'm asking the staff whether we've gotten any comment from either of those bodies about whether it would be difficult to find a structural engineer prepared to do this, to carry out this responsibility.
I believe that in the past we did receive a letter from the Building Inspection Commission that it was very difficult to recruit members for the commissions.
If there's no other requests, I'd move that we grant the waiver.
Is there a second?
My understanding is that the district attorney has indicated that a waiver wouldn't be a protection against a violation. So,
if I may, what the district attorney has said is that there's a possibility of the Ethics Commission granting a waiver under the compensated advocacy ban. And the district attorney says that is not her position to opine on that. What the district attorney also said was that the granting of a waiver does not mean that Mr. Buskovich may not be subject to allegations or complaints of violations of other laws other than a compensated advocacy ban. So, for instance, if he should violate other conflicts of interest or if he should violate the gift ban, there is no protection against that type of violation. The waiver only goes to his ability to represent clients before other departments in the city and county of San Francisco, the compensated advocacy ban.
In that case, I would second.
Is there any discussion?
I have just a comment to explain my vote. I will support the waiver. In the past, I think, made it quite clear that I'm not supportive of the waiver process in general. I think that we have sometimes made decisions to grant waivers that I've not felt comfortable with, and I'm very hesitant to use the waiver provision very often. I, back in 2005, supported the waiver when Mr. Vuskovich was appointed to the UMB Appeals Board. When this came up with regard to the Board of Examiners, I felt quite strongly that the way I read the law, he did not need a waiver. So I was comfortable with the process of making the decision not to grant a waiver based on the facts as I read them, that no waiver was needed. In reading the district attorney's opinion, I think that there are certainly valid points in that opinion, and much of what is contained in that memo I agree with in terms of the statement I made at the time that I did not think Mr. Vuskovich needed a waiver. At the same time, I felt like the Board of Examiners should, in fact, be required to come under the same regulations as other officers within the city. So I will support the waiver. I think given the current law, that is the fair thing to do. I would feel less comfortable supporting the waiver if we also did not have item 4 on the agenda, in which we attempt to rectify the situation and, in fact, bring the Board of Examiners under the Chapter 2, Article 3 of the Campaign and Governmental Conduct Code. So that's my position at this point.
I just would like to say that I agree with that reasoning.
Is there any public comment on this item? In that case, we will take our vote on the motion by Commissioner Harriman, seconded by Commissioner Ward, that we approve the waiver as requested. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I think I heard everyone. Okay. That passes by 0 with some helpful comments by Commissioner Hansen, thank you. We will now move to item 5 regarding proposed amendments to create a new Chapter 5 as described in our minutes and in the materials available to you. Is there someone here to speak for, is Supervisor Daly here? I didn't notice, I can't see everybody. Or someone here from his staff to introduce this?
No.
Would you like to? Somebody like to
there was no one
put this
available
on the table?
From the supervisor's office. It's first blush. First, let me say this is referred to us, does not require Ethics Commission passage, but the clerk referred it to us because ultimately we would write the regulations implementing the language, and we would also be the enforcement agency. So the Ethics Commission has an interest in it. At first blush, it looks fairly straightforward, but we've had a couple of days where folks have been coming to the commission stating problems with the various language, and I know there's folks here tonight that will speak to that. The commission can choose to adopt the bill, to adopt the language, to adopt it with amendments, ultimately postpone consideration so that the supervisor can address some of the issues with it, or simply take no action and send it back to the board without comment.
Okay. I'd like to begin with comments and questions from the commissioners, then take public comment, and then see if the commission, if there's anything that commissioners would like to say or ask after that. So, Commissioner Harriman. Yeah.
I wanted to say, when I read through this proposed ordinance, the first question I had is, what problem is this meant to address? And without anyone here from Supervisor Daly's office, it doesn't look like we're going to get an answer to that. Well, whatever that problem is, it struck me on reading it. I could think of examples where I just thought it was very overbroad. And the letter dated July 13, 2009 that we received that was sitting here sort of puts in writing some of the kinds of things I'd been thinking about. So I had a bunch of parade of horribles. I won't bore you with them because I think this letter does it. But I really do think there may be a problem that Supervisor Daley is trying to address, and it might be something worth addressing, but I just don't think it's here in this ordinance. It's just too overbroad. My suggestion would be that we just send it back to him and have him sort of tailor this to whatever problem it is that he perceives, and then come in and talk to us about that.
I would echo Commissioner Harriman's thoughts, and really just, I mean, let's focus here on the penalties. I mean, we're talking about criminal penalties for this, and so if it's not going to be more narrowly tailored, I don't think it's going to work. And so if he's going to come, or if he's sending a staffer next time around, I'd really like him to address that particular piece.
And my question would be, what's the likelihood, since they don't need the ethics, he doesn't need the Ethics Commission's approval, what's the likelihood that they'll actually send someone back unless we send it back with comment or actually reject it? So I would be more in favor of taking some affirmative action to, you know, state what our position is rather than simply send it back without comment.
And my position would be that, in general, I support the thrust of this legislation. I know this came up as an issue in the past when it came to light, and I believe we received word of this at some point in the past, that there was a city worker who held dual roles as someone who handled development issues and also was the director of a nonprofit that benefited city planning. I was concerned about that issue at the time. I know that this has come up with regard to another nonprofit that supports a city department. So I think it's an attempt to try to get a handle on a problem that has existed, that hasn't been discussed a great deal. I would support Commissioner Ward's suggestion. It certainly sounds like we're divided, and I guess I would like that to go back to Supervisor Daley, because I think the issue, while I have an initial difference of opinion with other commissioners, I think it warrants discussion to kind of flesh this out a little bit, and I'd like to do that here if we can.
If you're all comfortable, I'd like to hear from the members of the public and see what concerns they had, because they may be able to tell us more about either the cause or the concerns that they have, and then we can pick up our conversation, which may be much wiser as a result of that. So with that, I'd invite public comment on this item. And our practice is to take public comment for 3 minutes per person. Thank you very much. You probably knew that.
Hello, I'm Kathy Lawhan, Chief of the Maine Library, and I'm representing Luis Herrera, our city librarian. The Friends of the San Francisco Public Library have been a great partner of the library, and they do fund activities of the library. They allow us to expand our summer reading program, have more exhibits and other adult programming. They help with the training of our staff and many other activities. But the portion that they do raise for those activities are a very, very small part of our budget. One of their biggest contributions is the Branch Library Improvement Program, where we are building 6 new libraries and renovating 18 branches. And the Friends of the Library are raising money for furniture, fixtures, and equipment. And we would not be able to be doing this amount of renovation and building new buildings without the donations that are coming through the Friends to help with these three areas. And the Library Administration is very concerned that we would be prohibited or feel very constrained from attending even the openings or closings of these branch libraries. And that if we were asked to come to a fundraiser in order to answer questions about the library, that would be seen as soliciting funds. Or if we're thanking the Friends at any large gathering, that would be endorsing putting money into the Friends. And we just feel that we could inadvertently say something that could be construed to be soliciting, and then we would face these kind of penalties. Also, our frontline staff is asked many times a day, where can I give money for various things? And some things we do have come into the library budget, but many things need to go through our Friends groups. So would they be subject to some kind of penalty? So we really feel that if we could clarify what soliciting means, and you do have an amendment that we worked with the city attorney on, that at least would clarify, if this goes forward, what it means to solicit a request. So thanks and praise is, we would really like to be able to do that for any group that helps us raise money. And that's why we're suggesting this this clarification. I know there's some other people that will be speaking, but Phil Ginsburg, our new Park Recs and Park Director at the department heads meeting today, did alert all the other city departments about this. Some of them were not aware that it was in front of you today. So if it does, when it does go to the Rules Committee, if people aren't here to speak today, I'm sure other people will speak at that meeting. So, and to make sure you know that not everybody can make it tonight. Thank you.
Could you wait just a moment? Does anyone have questions?
I do. Yes. Thank you for being here. I have a question for you. I know that the Friends of the Library has been a great friend to the library and raises funds and offers support, as you articulated. And I certainly understand this would be a concern, and I know that this issue has come up specifically with regard to the Friends of the Library and what its relationship is to the library and whether that's appropriate or not. I don't know if this is a question that you can answer, but I'm in trying to get a handle on why there would need to be a separate nonprofit that would support the library. Can you just talk about what it would mean if the Friends of the Library didn't exist and the department itself, the library itself, was solely responsible for bringing in the dollars that it needed to run the library?
Well, one thing, we don't have the classifications of people who would know how to do it, so we'd have to figure out probably a new division that would figure out how to solicit funds. We do, on our own, put in for grants through the IMLF that's at the federal level, through the state library, so we do bring some money in ourselves also. So it would just be a whole nother ramping up. We've never really gone after private donations, so it would be a whole new experience, I think. And I would feel somewhat conflicted asking for money for the main library when maybe we needed the whole system. The Friends, we go directly to them and say, we every year articulate what we need money for. And then they get the people in place that that know enough about those kind of things and then solicit people themselves.
Okay, thank you.
I have two questions. You said that staff are often asked about how, by members of the public, how they can help support the library. If someone gives directly to the library or to the city for the library, I don't know the answer to this question, is that gift a tax-deductible contribution?
Yes, and anything okay. over $100 has to be posted on our website. And some people don't like their names up on the public website. If they give to the Friends, they can stay anonymous or just within the Friends.
The legislation that's been proposed to us has an element that says not simply that any solicitation or any thanks or appreciate any fundraising is barred, but only if the office or employee knows or has reason to know that the person you're soliciting does business with the department. But that seems not to make you feel comfortable that you could do it. So I'd just be interested in your addressing that element of it specifically, because it doesn't go to any activity with a support group. It is, while very broad and perhaps very likely overbroad, it is trying to separate asking for support from the library from dealing with vendors or people who are business people who deal with the library.
Well, I know just on the Friends board, there are some accountants, some lawyers, used to be some construction people. So, but we wouldn't know that necessarily when we would come before them. Mm-hmm. And at these fundraisers, we don't know who's there. Mm-hmm. And so it could be a contractor that's up for the next branch library, but we wouldn't mm-hmm. know that. And if we said anything that made it seem that we were going towards one or mm-hmm. the other, or this is what we really wanted, and they specialized in this specific thing, mm-hmm. then I think we could be held accountable, right. And that's what I would worry yeah. about.
Or even if you didn't make the particular pitch, simply if they were participants and you were asking for their money at a nice lunch,
right.
That would put you within the legislation. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Other comments?
Hi, everyone. My name is Ann Wintrobe. I'm with Friends of the Library. So I'm hoping I can address some more concerns that you may have. And to start off with the things that were just brought up before I get into my more general points, when you think about the challenges, as Kathy was just addressing, to really set the scene for you of what our activities might look like and where someone might be called into jeopardy and put in a very uncomfortable and, according to this legislation, criminal position, just to set a scene for you at one of our new branch library openings, like we just did at the Richmond Branch Library last month, we have hundreds, maybe thousands of people attending all of these parties. They're terrific community events. And Luis Herrera, from our city librarian, and many other library officials will thank the folks from the community who have been involved in fundraising in their communities. They will thank Friends of the Library. And, of course, without knowing who those hundreds and thousands of people are in the audience, it would create a perhaps drastically chilling effect on anyone who is speaking publicly at those events. So to get to my more general comments now, and I hope that this can explain a little bit more about what we do. As Kathy said, we are working in each and every community in San Francisco, not only to raise funds to furnish the libraries. When the initial bond was passed that funded the Branch Library Improvement Program back in 2000, it did not include money for furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Therefore, our new libraries that we are rebuilding or building fresh every day would be absolutely barren inside. So we make sure that all of these libraries have the computers, have the furniture, have all that they need to be the amazing, thriving community centers that they are. Now, what we are also doing is we are organizing communities. And Commissioner Hansen, to go to your question as well, one of the things that we bring to the library in addition to funds is we bring new people to the library in the thousands in each and every neighborhood. I don't want to throw too many statistics your way, but when we look at people who are donating to our neighborhood library campaign, and those are the people who are funding the furniture, fixtures, and equipment, I believe it's nearly 75% of those people have never given to Friends of the Library before. They're coming in specifically to fund and to help their branch library, and they're bringing their families in, they're bringing their friends in, they're making libraries the vibrant community centers that they are today. So at Friends of the Library, we wholeheartedly feel that this legislation is very dangerous, that it will create a chilling effect for anyone who serves not only on our board, but who volunteers. We work with hundreds of volunteers. The library has many volunteers. And this would be an impediment towards people working to better the civic institutions that we all treasure. As we all know, we are in a time of economic crisis, and we need to be focusing on creating innovative and responsible public-private partnerships that benefit all of the city agencies that we all care so passionately about. And I know you all do, too, which is why we're here at this commission today. So thank you so much for your attention to this. Thank you for thinking about this critically. And thank you for hearing our very, very serious concerns about this legislation.
Okay. Any questions? Commissioner Hansen? No? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any further public comment? Thank you.
Hi. Good evening, Commissioners. I'm John Buchanan, Director of the Fine Arts Museums of San Francisco, and thank you for reviewing this legislation. We appreciate also the technical legal amendment that I believe Mr. Givner has distributed to you that addresses and acknowledges the exclusive jurisdiction of the charitable trust departments of the City of San Francisco under the charter. And those would include the Fine Arts Museums of San Francisco, the Asian Art Museum, and the War Memorial Buildings. And if you look back a bit in the history of the Fine Arts Museums, you will see that we were founded by two charitable donations, and we continue to maintain and exist through charitable contributions towards our buildings. The New De Young, of course, was built exclusively by private sector money for the maintenance, for the security, and for the teaching from the museum's own art collections. So thank you very much for reviewing the legislation, also for looking at this charitable trust department language that Mr. Givner has put forward to you, and I think also shared with Supervisor Daly's office. And I'll be happy to answer any questions that you'd like me to, that I can.
Commissioner? No, thank you very much. Okay. We appreciate your contribution to this conversation.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Luis Cancel. I'm the Director of Cultural Affairs for the San Francisco Arts Commission. And my comments regarding this legislation, I'm sure that Supervisor Daley has the best interests of the city at heart and is trying to encourage and promote a very transparent and even field of operations out there. But the Arts Commission, unlike the libraries or Rec and Park, actually is even more adversely affected by this proposed legislation than those entities. Rec and Park and the library have the benefit of a Friends Society, going out there and raising money on behalf of programs and augmenting the public resources that are applied in those areas. The Arts Commission does not. And therefore, since I've arrived, for the programs of the Arts Commission, which are, all very valuable but underfunded, this would absolutely prohibit us from doing any additional efforts to raise additional private sector donations for our programs. And I'll give you an example. The arts collection of the city numbers in about more than 3,000 objects. It's valued anywhere between $50 and $80 million. But the appropriations for maintaining that collection, in other words, conservation funds appropriated every year, is about $15,000. And most of that disappears with the first few graffiti abatements that we have to undertake when, one of our sculptures in a prominent public place is tagged. So we have entered into an understanding with the San Francisco Art Dealers Association to do fundraising, to help us raise money, additional money, to help conserve the collection. And we're about to launch a campaign and so forth. This legislation would prohibit me and my staff from being able to talk and effectively pitch this fundraising effort. And that would be the end of that effort, for sure. So we really do see this as a well-intentioned, but absolutely having unintended consequences of undermining our ability to fundraise from the private sector. And I think that when you look at the current fiscal year and the next few years going forward, the city and the public sector resources that we have are all going to be very challenged, and it's really incumbent on some of our programs and departments to be able to try to convince those that can contribute and care passionately about their particular sectors to go out there and raise some money. And if we're not able to do that, as this legislation, I believe anybody who's done fundraising would know, this would be an absolutely chilling effect. Because who is going to stop to try to think about all of the legal ramifications associated with soliciting, donations? And that's the end of the story. I mean, the moment this comes up and you have to, factor that into a development campaign, that would really be very chilling. So we're here to really plead that this, although well-intentioned, we hope that this is really, rethought. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Excuse me.
Yes. Through the chair. Thank you. I'm sorry. I have a question with regard to your comment that there isn't a Friends of the Art Commission as there is with a Friends of the Library, for
right.
example,
mm-hmm.
or a body such as SPUR that supports the Planning Department. As I read the language, at least in the background of this legislation, it specifically talks about barring a city officer or employee from soliciting or requesting a gift or donation from any person to a nonprofit group. So can you just talk a little bit about how you actually raise funds? In the case of the library, I understand that the intent of the legislation is to try to separate the officers of the library from soliciting donations to the Friends of the Library, for example. And one of the concerns has to do with whether someone might be a contractor involved with the library or interested in soliciting a contract with the library. So to ask that person for a gift to the library when that person might also be bidding on a contract would be of concern. In your case, there isn't a nonprofit that specifically supports the Arts Commission. So how do you do your private fundraising? Are you, in fact, I guess what I'm trying to get to is, are you covered by this legislation that seems to focus specifically on solicitations that would go to a nonprofit as opposed to solicitations that would come into the Art Commission?
First of all, down the road, it's been, you know, part of our planning exercise that we're undertaking right now. We're trying to see how we can establish a Friends of the Arts Commission.
Okay.
And secondly, from what I read of this legislation, it prohibits the city employees from being able to solicit and, you know, from anybody that might have some business with our agency. And we reach, you know, we're involved with construction, we're involved with maintenance of buildings, we give grants, we commission art. I mean, there's so many different ways that people could be engaged with our commission that it really then becomes a kind of a guessing game. You know, are we in violation, are we not?
I appreciate that, and if you're attempting to create a Friends of the Art Commission, then I would see you definitely fitting under this. I'm not sure that you are currently, but I appreciate that
Okay. Information.
Thank you.
Anything else? Great, thank you.
No, thank you. Other comment? Thank you.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Dennis Kern. I'm the Director of Operations at the Recreation and Park Department. I'm here on behalf of our new General Manager, Phil Ginsburg. We recently learned of this legislation proposal, and the Rec and Park Department had several concerns with it, particularly so because we as a department are seeking increased partnership relationships throughout the city. As you may know, we're one of the city's largest landowners with all of the 240-plus parks that we have throughout the city. And each of them, many of them, will have a Friends of group, and we also have well-known partners in the Neighborhood Parks Council and the San Francisco Parks Trust. The legislation as proposed appears to us to be sufficiently vague and overly broad to be at least discouraging to forming new partnerships or continuing with the current partnerships that we do have with the department. We as a department wish to be more welcoming and encouraging of donations and partnership support, which this proposed legislation seems to, the word has, you know, it's been used already this evening, have a chilling effect on that type of endeavor. When we read the legislation, the fact that in defining what doing, having business with a department constitutes, it includes even obtaining a permit. And for the Rec and Park Department, that could be something as simple as an event permit to use a park for an event of some sort, or even as mundane as having a picnic permit for a smaller group of 25 people. And a lot of the groups, many of them, overwhelmingly most of them nonprofits that come to us, would seek a permit, we would give it to them, and perhaps they would be raising money for their own park or for the department as a whole, and then find themselves or ourselves in violation of this legislation. So in summary, we believe that as proposed, the legislation is at least challenging the kind of civic engagement, and for us in particular, the kind of park stewardship that we are seeking to increase and engender further throughout the city.
Any questions?
No questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Meredith Thomas. I'm the Executive Director of the Neighborhood Parks Council, and I want to echo the concerns that my colleague at the Recreation and Parks Department, Dennis Kern, just shared with you regarding this legislation. I would add, in addition to being overly broad and certainly something that would deter participation, it's also pretty dicey. And I support your Commissioner's suggestion that you not only send this back, but send it back with some specific comment, because I am concerned that the value of this commission and the input that you might have on this legislation might not be valued if it doesn't leave here with some recommendations. Essentially, the Neighborhood Parks Council advocates for a superior recreation and park system in every neighborhood in San Francisco. And the only way that our work can be actionable is if we're working at a grassroots level, addressing parks on an individual basis, and ensuring that the way that the neighborhood would like to see their park maintained and utilized and activated is what happens. The only way that we can do that is by having a close partnership with the Recreation and Parks Department to make sure that what the community wants to do can be handled and managed by the Recreation and Parks Department, and that the Recreation and Parks Department recognizes the differences we have between our neighborhood parks. And so to create an environment where these Friends of groups are now afraid to work more closely with their elected officials is not a good idea. We need to keep the folks who represent us and work on behalf of the city and among the city family linked closely to these community organizations to share visions, to share the burden of getting these parks improved and activated. And this legislation would undermine relationships people have worked very hard to establish with members of the city family and with the commission. Also, it's an important thing to note that as an organization, a grassroots Friends of Park group is establishing itself, one of the ways that it can create a sense of legitimacy is by having close partners at the city level. A lot of private entities that are funding park-related projects want demonstrated frameworks in place. They want to know that the city supports the project. They want letters of support for grant applications from these park groups to know that the community isn't running down a rabbit hole, but is in fact proposing a capital improvement that the city's supporting. And I'm concerned about how that relationship will work moving forward, that funders need to know that if they're investing in a capital improvement, if they're going to be renovating a playground, that that playground will actually be renovated, that it'll be renovated in the timeline specified, and that the department has a role in the process. And so everything from not being able to have the general manager stand up at our Christmas party and remind folks to help make a contribution to the Neighborhood Parks Council at year end to ensure that our work continues, on to major capital investments that we partner closely with the department on, could be affected by this. So I would strongly recommend that you do your best to send this out of here asking Supervisor Daley exactly what he was planning with this. Thank you.
Anybody else like to make a comment? Commissioners, do you have any points you want to make or discussion about how you'd like to handle this?
Actually, curious, Commissioner Ward, whether your preference is to simply reject it, the legislation as proposed, or just send it back with copy, with sort of a transcript of the comments that we've heard. What sort of, based on your earlier comment?
Well, I think we ought to send it back with some type of comment, perhaps indicating some of what we've heard here and the types of groups that we've heard. And I describe what we've heard as a prophecy of unintended consequences. And if we characterize it that way, It may be that Supervisor Daley understands all of this and in spite of that is proposing this legislation, but that's the way we find that out, I think.
Yeah, I think would be the easiest and most helpful thing to do is just to, we have a transcript, don't we, or we can put together a transcript, we have this on tape, just when we send it back, send the portion of the meeting that has to do with this discussion.
That was exactly my thought, that we make sure that he understands the concerns from some of these entities and the kinds of questions that we had initially, and that we think that the if there is a problem or an issue, it would be helpful for him to be clear and specific, I think, to look at whether the statements of incompatible activities cover the behavior that he's concerned about. And we would be happy to engage with him if he would like to refine this to get at something that that is a palpable problem. Like Commissioner Hansen, I do remember some questions to which this might be addressed, but without joining the issue, I don't know if it is, and I'm convinced that there are potentially pernicious concerns that outweigh my speculations. But if there is a there, we would be open to hearing about it in a more tailored fashion if there is one, but that in this form we're concerned and would like him to hear the comment that we heard. Would that be satisfactory?
I would concur. I think the portion of this meeting should go directly to Supervisor Daley. In addition, I guess I would just like to make a stronger request that he consider coming to our next meeting so that we could have this fuller discussion.
Assuming he wants to go forward with this
or some version, yeah.
Everybody comfortable with that?
Jack? Yeah, we need a motion.
Sure. Yeah.
So I would move that we send this legislation back to Supervisor Daley and send with it that portion of the transcript of tonight's meeting that will tell him what the concerns were, both from people from around the city, from various friends groups, and from the commissioners.
And would you take as a friendly amendment Commissioner Hansen's suggestion? And that
he would read that as part of the transcript, so
okay.
He can come or not.
Okay.
I think that will be part of the
okay.
transcript that will be sent to him.
Is there a second?
Sure.
public comment on the motion that Commissioner Harriman has made? In that case, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. The motion passes. Commissioner Hanson?
Just thank you. One other thing on this issue. There was an opinion piece in the Examiner today, I believe it was. Very short opinion piece that, and I got this online, that said that the Ethics Commission had supported this legislation. I'm not sure where that information came from, but I thought it might make sense to correct that misunderstanding because it's now out in the public domain. So particularly given this vote, it's clear that we haven't made a decision yet whether to support this or not. I have a copy of it if you'd like it. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your comments. To their
back to number four.
We were polite. Okay, we're going to return now to item number four, which follows up on Genesis is related to item three. Would staff like to introduce what's before us? Thank you.
There's a memo that describes what the proposed amendments are, which basically are fourfold. One is to define the word officer for purposes of the conflict of interest laws under Chapter 2, Article 3 of the San Francisco Campaign Governmental Conduct Code. Two is to apply the conflict of interest laws to officers. Three is to make several modifications to the contracting ban for members of boards and commissions, and four is to rename Chapter 2 as the Government Ethics Ordinance. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Commissioners?
I just had one question. On the third page, I guess, of the memo, we talk about, it says, second, the legislation would authorize the commission to waive the contracting ban. Is that creating a waiver system where one does not exist, or it is? John Givner is nodding. Could you tell me a little bit more about that then?
And sure. The Campaign and Governmental Conduct Code, Article 3, Chapter 2, which maybe will be renamed so that we don't have to go through that every time, currently allows you to waive certain conflict of interest laws, like the compensated advocacy ban, which you did today. There's no waiver provision in Section 3.222, the contracting ban. And so this would just add a waiver provision so that the Ethics Commission could decide to waive that ban under certain circumstances.
And the reason for that is what? To create consistency? You know for a fact that there are contractors who should have gotten a ban, I mean, or a waiver, or what? Why are we doing that?
Yep. Consistency, Ms. Ng says. Personally, I've also spoken with various appointing authorities over the years who have been frustrated by their inability to come to the Ethics Commission to seek a waiver because they have a supremely qualified candidate who maybe enters certain contracts that they don't see cause any corruption concerns. There are very few people who fit the criteria that go with the particular seat they're trying to appoint to. And so I've passed those concerns along to the commission staff.
Could you just say that again? You hear the concerns from the appointing authority?
Generally, the mayor and the board have authority to appoint almost every seat on commissions and boards. For instance, if the mayor wanted to appoint Mr. Buskovich to the structural engineer seat on the Building Inspection Commission. As Mr. Buskovich said, there are 30 qualified people in the city, and so if he had contracts with the city or was in was a solo practitioner in a field where he had to make contracts with the city, that would eliminate him as a candidate currently. Under the proposal, the mayor or Mr. Buskovich could come to the commission and ask for a waiver, just like he did with regard to the compensated advocacy ban. And the commission could decide whether to waive the ban or not.
mean, it is an interesting sort of bind because the authorizing legislation for these boards has these specified seats that the city uses to get advice and expertise. The city could have chosen to do it another way and purchased the expertise either on staff or by contract and not put people onto the board, which carries with it this set of constraints. They would operate by a different set of rules. So it's not the only solution to this dilemma, but it's the solution that is in place. We can't tell folks to alter it, and if it works without ethical violations, that's all we're supposed to look at. It is a practical solution to the dilemma. Are there any other questions about any other aspect of this? I have a question. I just wondered, because the language is in the middle of page 2, legislation would apply to city offices instead of members of appointed boards and commissions. And I just wondered if the effect at the end of the day of this is to make officers and members of boards and commissions equal and barred from contracting, equal in these provisions, or are they in fact quite different in who they apply to when?
The legislation redefines the term officer,
right.
And so now it would include any member of a board or commission required by Article 3, Chapter 1 of the Campaign Governmental Conduct Code to file statements of economic interest, the Form 700. So that when we make these changes to officer, it seems to clarify the law a little bit more, but it also makes those folks who serve on boards and commissions but who are also required to file SEIs, and those individuals are generally people who make decisions on behalf of the city, make them subject to these conflict of interest laws. So somebody who, for instance, is a member of an advisory body that may not be required to file an SEI because the decisions that they make are generally just recommendations, they would not be subject to the conflict of interest laws.
So if I'm reading this sentence properly, it's really just the terminology is different, that the way that the application is described, you will use the phrase city officers instead of specifying. It doesn't really change the jurisdiction. Right. Got it. Thank you. So it's not describing the effect. It's saying we will regulate these people by using this broader term, not instead of or dropping them.
Right. It's just a funny way of writing that first sentence.
Just want to make sure I understood. Anyone else? Any other comments?
I have a question.
Yeah.
I have a question on page 2, and it's really around the first two paragraphs of page 2, regarding who we're trying to capture, if you will, in this category, and we say specifically that we would not include non-city legal entities such as the Board of Education and Community College. I think I understand why we're not currently able to do that. I also know that certainly I have concern, and we've heard from other folks in these meetings, with regard to the fact that while these are not city entities, they're officers, their elected members are in fact serving the city of San Francisco, operating in the city of San Francisco, and yet are not subject to our specific conflict of interest laws, which seems manifestly unfair to many people who are subject to those conflict of interest rules when they see other people who are serving in a similar elected or appointed capacity not having to adhere to those same laws. And I guess I'm just wondering, I understand that this is a broad question, I understand that we've talked at least around this a bit in the past, but I'm wondering if this might be an opportunity to try to address that question and whether there's any way at all possible to consider trying to bring those folks into such a definition.
I don't think so. Just as a matter of state law, the city has certain powers over the officers of the community college district and the school district and doesn't have others. So the city is the filing officer for their Form 700s and regulates their elections and actually holds their elections subject to certain reimbursement requirements, but doesn't govern them in terms of conflict of interest provisions. And that's just a state law barrier.
And whether it's considered a part of this change or whether it's looked at separately, your opinion is that it doesn't seem possible at all to sort of challenge that point of state law?
You know, frankly, I haven't looked at it very carefully. I'm happy to and get back to you and the staff as well, look at it more closely in the next week or two. But that's my understanding based on the amount of time I've spent on it.
Right. I mean, that would be my sense as well. I would also really appreciate it if we could find some way to consider that, and it makes sense that maybe we do that separately from this legislation, which I support. But it continues to be a concern of mine. Thank you.
Any other comments, or do I hear a motion?
I would make a motion to support the legislation as proposed by staff.
Second?
I'll second.
Is there public comment on this item? Sir? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you very much. We are moving to item 6, discussion of the budget outcomes for fiscal years 09 and 2010. Would you like to update us, Mr. St. Croix?
We put this on the agenda just to take a moment to explain the current status of the election campaign fund, which obviously everyone knows is the fund we manage to give money to public finance candidates. As part of their efforts to meet ongoing budget needs, as you all know, just before the beginning of the fiscal year that just ended, or the prior fiscal year, I should say, the mayor's finance office de-appropriated $5 million out of the fund, and then in May of this year, de-appropriated another $2.3 million out of the fund. At that point, that leaves the fund with $750,000. I'm going to use approximate figures, with another $1.9 million deposit due now that we're in the new fiscal year, and then an additional $1.9 million due at the beginning of the fiscal year that starts approximately 1 year from now. That will leave us in 2010 when there's a supervisorial race with about $4.5 million in the fund, maybe $4.6 million. So the communication that I made to the finance committee at the board during budget hearings was, I believe there's sufficient funding for the supervisorial races in 2010. Their concern, obviously, of course, and the concern of the public finance community, was that the mayoral elections in 2011, whatever's left after the supervisorial races, clearly won't be enough money. In response to that, the mayor issued a letter in writing that promised to put funding back into the fund up to the $7.3 million that they have, if you want to call it borrowed or de-appropriated or, you know, used for other purposes, transferred back to the general fund at that point. So my feeling is that there's going to be a need for a supplemental appropriation or as part of the actual budget in 2011, the restoration of that funding. I think the mayor's office was sincere about that. There have been times in the past when they put promises in writing that funding would be there if we need it. The 1 year where we did run short, that they quickly arranged for a supplemental. So the track record, as I said to the board of supervisors, is a short one, but a good one.
How much, remind us, how much do we typically need for the supervisorial races?
We spent $1.4 million this year, this past year. which was, I think, actually 1.3, which was less by about 400,000 than I had initially predicted would be the minimum that we would need.
My question is, how are we in a position to represent that there will be enough money for the supervisorial campaigns based on a payment of 1.9 that's due now and 1.9 that's due a year from now, when the practice has been for them to take funds out? So how do we know that they won't deposit the 1.9 now and 6, 7, 8 months later take it or a portion of it back?
If they decided to do that, there would not be any way to stop them. Obviously, they can do it at will. I think that the understanding we all have with the mayor's finance office, the mayor's office, and the board is that they have no intention of doing that again this year, but they understand that it's implicit in their promise to make sure there's full funding in 2011, that the satisfaction we have that the money will be there in 2010 is not something they can screw with, excuse my expression, not something they can fool with. Those deposits are statutory, unlike the rest of the budget document, which you can alter from year to year. So the requirements, the deposits do have to be made. But there's nothing to stop them from taking that money, but I think that there would be a significant amount of outrage at the board and in the public finance community if they were to take those funds when there's an understanding that we all need that money to be there in 2010 for the supervisorial races, and then what's left over will not be sufficient in 2011. So it's essentially on the word of the mayor's office.
Can I ask the question in a little bit different way? If we were to have very few coins in our coffers in the fund, and there were an election and payments were due to people under the formulae that we've adopted and a system that the voters had approved, what would happen if we said these candidates are eligible for this amount of money and the money wasn't there? Does that become a draw on the city? Is that an obligation of the cities, whether or not the money was sitting in the fund? So my question is really, does it matter whether we have the money? Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm suggesting the lawsuit right now. But is there an obligation on the part of the city, or does that to be determined and we can't speculate on it now? I mean, I guess it's a question of why we deposit it into a fund. Is it just a good management that the city doesn't have to spike its commitment in the years when there are races and not in between? Is it just a good savings matter? If the obligation remains by the city, then there are different ways to come at the question, what happens if there's not money? I think there would be a potentially harmful effect on candidates who wanted to run and benefit from the system if they said, well, there's nothing in the cupboard, but I'll run and take my chances that I will get the payments from the fund that I want. So I don't think it's that, as I'm thinking aloud, that gives another reason for the city to make the payment, to have a system in which it makes the payments.
I mean, just thinking as a litigator, it could never come to that. If there's not sufficient money there and it has to be there by law and it's been taken out, there's going to be a lawsuit with a TRO before you can blink. I mean, it's
back when we appropriated this money, we sort of guessed what we would need, and it wasn't a fund per se. There was concern that if not enough money was appropriated, people would be afraid, candidates would be mm-hmm. afraid that there mm-hmm. wouldn't be enough there, and that would mm-hmm. discourage participation, which is one of the reasons a fund was created.
Just a money management matter.
Right.
It's a
having said that, though,
an encouragement.
The general fund is a very fungible thing, and so that, you know, the money is there somewhere. And I've occasionally told people all the city's money is in a big vault in the basement of the city hall in a big pile. It's not separated into accounts. Unfortunately, some people have actually believed me when I say that. Where's that room?
Right.
That seems to be true at the state level as well, efforts of the voters to the contrary.
So we're kind of moving paper around, but we are, as I stated, we are in a trust situation where, you know, the money's been allocated, it should be there, and there shouldn't be an issue that when we cut those checks, they'll be issued in cash. And in fact, the year that we ran out of money, in the time that we waited for the supplemental, and which was not that long, the Comptroller's Office actually encumbered funds, Ethics Commission funds, for salaries and other accounts until that was there. But it wasn't like we had to stop operating things because they were encumbering funds that were essential for other stuff. It was just sort of the way they do things on paper to say, when the new funds get here, we'll release the old funds, even though it's all, like I said, you know, mentally, it's the same big pile of money.
Are there any other questions or comments?
One comment. I had thought that we were considering asking someone from the mayor's office to come and talk to us about, in particular, the removal, the transfer of $2.3 million. And I think we labor under the presumption that we have a pretty good transparent relationship with the mayor's office. But in fact, when the mayor transfers $2.3 million and does not tell us, and then it takes some work to figure that out, that we've in fact lost 2.3, and what our budget looks like from the mayor is that we've received 1.9, but in fact it's really only 1.9 of 2.3. I don't want us to labor under the assumption that we actually got 1.9 because we got a part of what was transferred, and I continue to have concerns about building this on a trusting relationship, particularly when I see that kind of action where we're not informed, it's not a request, we're not told, it just happens. I would like to see the letter because I know that we received that letter and I just think it would be good for us all to see it. I appreciate that the mayor's office was willing to provide that letter when you asked. I believe, and because I don't know what the letter says, you had asked for two different letters about the two different pots of money, if you will, that we lost, the two separate amounts that we lost at two different occasions. Does this letter actually cover all of the funding, for example, the amount that was lost last year, as well as the...
Yeah, the letter addresses the whole 7.3
combined.
Million.
Okay.
There were two, what they call it, a de-appropriation. I guess the mayor has the authority, once money's been appropriated, something right. to de-appropriate it back to the general fund. So the one was $5
million. Right.
And then the more recent one was $2.3 million. And they did call and tell me, but it had already been de-appropriated.
After the fact. Yeah.
So the $2.3 million was actually taken from prior deposits into the fund. And then the $1.9 million, and that left $750,000 as the fund balance. The 1.9 then goes in, bringing the fund balance up to 2.6 plus million toward the 2010. And then the additional, the 1.9 figure next year is an approximation because it's based on the population of the city. So last year it was 1.8, this year is 1.9, maybe a few dollars more next year because population is expected to, you know, moderately increase.
Thank you.
The other thing is that I wanted to update you on, there was some talk at the Board of Supervisors of restoring some of that $2.3 million in add-backs, but the Budget and Finance Committee opted not to do that. And I think once they receive the letter from the mayor, and I'll make sure you have a copy of this letter tomorrow. I'm sorry, I thought I already sent it out to you. Seemed to satisfy them that there was a commitment there. I know that supervisors Avalos and Mirkarimi and Campos in particular were concerned, and Supervisor Mirkarimi characterized it as a big step in the right direction. So ultimately, I think they decided in their difficulties in coming up with money for add backs and making ends meet that
Ultimately, they're secure enough that money's going to be there when it's needed.
Thank you very much. Let's move on to item 7. We have two parts to our closed session. The commission is now going to go into a closed session. Do I hear a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Seconded. Thank you. Do you need a comment on that?
Yes.
Yes. Do I hear comment on the motion to go into closed session for personnel and confidential items? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The commission will now go into closed session. Thank you very much. Yes, we have requested a short... Okay. We are now in open session. And the commission is resuming its deliberations. Do I hear a motion regarding the closed session?
I'll move that the Ethics Commission find that it's in the best interest of the public not to disclose its closed session deliberations, re anticipated litigation, or re public employee performance evaluation.
And we take public comment on that. Is there any public comment on the motion? It involves both subjects that we spoke to. Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
The next item on our agenda is item 9, minutes of the commission's regular meeting of June 8th. Do any commissioners have any corrections, additions, or comments on the minutes? Which should be as proportionately brief given the length of the meeting. I don't see any. We take
the minutes.
Public comment? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. None opposed. Thank you. And we turn to the executive director's report, which has been provided to us, commissioners. Is there anything you'd like to flag, Jack?
There's one additional bit of information on the budget. After the budget analyst cut of $5,700, we ended up with just over 3% increase, which you all are already informed of. Supervisor David Chu had introduced more recently an amendment to the budget or a budgetary amendment that is going to seek to look at recentralizing tech functions in the city, which have been largely decentralized over the last. Gives me chills too. To that end, they have enforced a cut against every single city agency that has its own tech budget, including us. They're ultimately going to drain $3.7 million in tech funds from different agencies. $1 million of that is giving to the Department of DOT to fund a study about reintegrating tech functions in a centralized system.
Do you know offhand the last time they were decentralized?
Well, it's been a sort of a process of attrition.
This is a pendulum, right?
It's been a process of attrition. As you know, we not only have our own IT person who is a sheer genius, but we also have a contract with a private entity to provide tech services. So ultimately, I'm going to have to take a cut of just under $4,000 on top from the new budget to shoulder that contribution that's being forced by the board. Not much we can do about it, but I'll find $4,000 to fork over. So that's it on the budget.
Through the chair, can I just ask, do we have to take the $4,000 in tech, or can we decide where we take the $4,000 from?
It's supposed to come from tech, but the net file contract is a contract. We can't cut that. And Stephen's salary is a salary. You can't nick it there. So I'm going to have to find a place else in the budget. Most likely it's going to come out of temp salary funds. And then the other highlight is the new website. There's an explanation. I know Commissioner Hansen was curious about why we have a new one, and I hope that's explained in the report. I think it looks good. Something you should know is that web search functions like Google and stuff are part of their ability to find things is based on prior searches. So for a short time when people do some searches,
They're going to get directed to the new website, and not all of the links have been made to stuff that's been migrated from the old website. Ultimately, they should still find what they're looking for, but we'll be able to help them. So if you hear about any complaints along those lines, it's a problem that's being addressed, and it was unavoidable. I can say, too, that I know that you all know former Commissioner Lynn has been out of the hospital for about a week, and he's been well enough to look at the new website and make some suggestions and even a few compliments.
And to blog.
Good.
That's good news.
So that's all to the good. The staff put a lot of work into that to try to organize it on a somewhat more intelligent basis. Of course, people are used to using the old organization, so it's going to seem probably a little bit of a pain to get used to the new one. But based on the practical application that they used in organizing it, ultimately they think people will be able to navigate it more easily. So even myself, when I go to look for things, I have to sort of reorient myself. But I think that's just a growing pain that we're going to deal with. And I'll take questions on anything else that's in the report.
Anyone? Commissioner Hensel,
thank you. I have a few questions. Thank you for this. I have a question on page 2 under collection of late filing fees and contribution forfeitures. And it's a question about waivers. My memory is that the last CD report, maybe the one before that, we had some information about waiver requests, more detailed information about waiver requests that were pending. It would be helpful, I think, to have both the information under the late filing fees as well as contribution forfeitures about the waiver requests that are pending, how much they are, how long they've been pending. And my memory is that we added that at some point to the ED report, because I remember saying, it was great to see that. Is it possible to add that information under B for both the late filing fees and contribution forfeitures?
I'm going to look back to see what you're talking about, because I'm not sure. But there is a report that we instituted that's a quarterly report. So it's only in the ED report 4 times a year.
Regardless of what I remember, is it possible? It would be helpful to have something a little more specific than staff continues to process requests.
Let me follow up with you to identify what that is.
Just really the amount and the number of waiver requests and where they are in the house. Page 5, at the top of the page, we cite that the total number of filers, this is under FEIs, dropped from 690 to 629 because staff determined that 61 annual filers left office. Is there a way to track that better so that we know who left office and our numbers can be more accurate? And maybe more importantly, is there a way to stay on top of people who left office to make sure that they file and file the correct form?
Unfortunately, we have to rely on commission secretaries to do that. And while I think most of them do inform departing commissioners of their obligations, there's no impetus for them to follow up on those. I think once their commissioners are gone, they're sort of out of sight, out of mind, sometimes happily. the process of getting the annual filings is really the best snapshot we have of getting those lists and everything. We have a process for making sure that incoming board members file and sign. And ones that are due for reappointment, and we're working with the mayor's office on those. But the ones that leave are a little bit harder to tag. Mm-hmm. We don't really have the authority to institute a formal process for secretaries to let us know. We ask them over and over again. We could send out a monthly memo saying who's left your commission this month. And I'll have to give that some thought to see if it's practicable or not.
I wouldn't suggest a monthly memo, but I do think, if I'm remembering correctly, this has been a historic problem where we don't get the leaving office filing. So if there's some way we can, in some ways I guess it's not as important certainly as the other filings, but we need to wrap people up so that we know that we don't need to keep contacting them. The paragraph after that, the question I have is at the very end of that paragraph on July 8, 2009, we issued our third non-filer notices to 33 non-filers.
Mm-hmm.
So the question, of course, as always, is now what? They have three notices. What else can we do to get these folks to file? What else?
We have two options. We can fine them for not filing and then fight over that, or we can refer them to the FPPC and have them do it. Generally speaking, while the FPPC will sometimes, in individual cases, prosecute these, generally they have a policy of things that are should be enforced, but we don't because we don't have resources, and that kind of falls on that shelf.
Would the FPPC communicate with them? I mean, maybe just a different body that they
I don't know if we could ask them to make a special case for us to send a letter or something like that.
Yeah, no, I'm just wondering what they do. I'm not necessarily tailored, but
in a case like this, they just
it's
something we should enforce, but we don't. They don't. They just
mm-hmm. Okay.
It's just not enough of an importance to them to.
So we could say,
yeah.
If you don't, the fourth letter could say, if you don't, we'll refer you. But that's sort of a tautology because we don't.
Well, we've kind of decided to tell them we can fine you $1,000.
Do we list the people on our site or do something else?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So how fast are we going to fine them or refer to the FPPC or take that fourth step?
I can't answer that because this is. We've really only ever gotten this far. There's somebody new this year that's handling this. It's
right.
Got a certain amount of energy she's putting into it. So,
would you
we'll
let
see
us? Would you let us know?
It's not a fourth step that has the escalated language. Maybe it's the third.
Right. Okay. Yeah. But we've always, we've always shot for like a 90-cent compliance range and been happy with that. So this is, doing a little bit more.
Sounds like you've got somebody on it who's thinking about it.
Yeah.
Anything else, Commissioner Hanson?
The last thing I had was about the website. We've talked about this a bit. It sounds like from what you said that the archive situation is being taken care of. Will that was one of my major concerns. I know links are made for them looking for the links and we don't have the links. So will we ultimately have all the archives that we always
had
before?
Yeah, and we've even spoken to Yahoo and Google and asked them to give us a little bit of a boost. And I don't really understand what it is they would do to do that, but when Stephen tells me it's being taken care of, I believe him. He has never disappointed us.
The other thing about the website is maybe I missed this, but I didn't know we were changing our website. So just would have been helpful to know that was in process, and I think it would have been useful and maybe still could be to send out a press, issue a press release, send out a notice to interested persons just to let people
maybe
know
when we have the link.
There's a new access, although the old access will work for a while, but just to inform people what we're doing.
I think we did send something to I'll double check, but if we haven't sent an interested person's notice, it's not too late.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Thank you. Next item is items for future meetings.
Public comment on that?
Oh, public comment on the executive director's report? There is somebody there. We can see it. Is there any public comment on the executive director's report? Sorry. Items for future meetings. Do commissioners have items that they want to add to the agenda that you have not previously suggested we consider? Obviously, you can make suggestions in between the meetings as well.
I have a couple suggestions.
Yeah. Given the lateness of the hour, could you just do them quickly?
Or do it later?
Yeah. No, quickly or later. I mean, you're entitled to make them now, just briefly. It would be helpful.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We close with public comment on matters appearing or not appearing on the agenda that are within the jurisdiction of the commission. Thank you. We appreciate the public's interest. We could entertain a motion for adjournment if anyone were so inclined. Would you like the privilege, Commissioner Harriman?
No, I'll let Commissioner Ward do it.
It's a race to the finish here. Sir?
I move that we adjourn.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Public comment.
I don't think so. I don't think we have to take public comment on adjournment, do we? I thought that was the one we don't.
All in favor?
All in favor? Aye. Thank you very much. We appreciate your attentiveness. And I do think we had